though.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Keith, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey.
And my home group is the Wednesday Night Big Book Study Group. I want to congratulate all the celebrants tonight. And I pray that the ones who didn't show up aren't getting out getting drunk right now. So, stole that from Joe. But, yeah, like you said, I've never done this before. I've spoken lots of times in my sobriety is July 15, 2003. And I've spoken a lot, but I've never done a 12-step series. So, it's whatever God's going to do, he's going to do. But, so what it was like for me with this first step. And before I begin, though, I was talking to a friend of mine today, and again, the celebrants, that could happen to you if you're new. But if you're new and you've been struggling, I found out last night that a friend of mine passed away last Wednesday. OD, they found him with a needle in his arm. And, you know, this guy had 19 years at one time, doing the deal, and he stopped. For whatever reason, he stopped. And when Joe told me that last night, I was just like blown away by that. So there's the good stuff and there's the bad stuff. That's what can happen to us. By a show of hands, who in here knows somebody that has died as a direct result of drugs and alcohol? Raise your hand. Leave them up for 1 second. Look around. Right? So of course, keep coming back. But this thing wants us dead. My disease wants me dead. You know, it wants me dead. And the first step for me, you know, it was like I got with some men that were armed with the facts. And I got with this lady. She was an angel in my life, you know. God puts people in your life for a reason, a season, a lifetime. And this lady, her name was Lorna Mays. Christian woman, not an alcoholic. And at the end of my run, I was 35 years old. Had been drinking and drugging for 20 years, and geographical cures along the way, Georgia, the Marine Corps, because I thought the Marine Corps would fix me, but it didn't, you know. So I come to Florida, and I get a hotel room down right here on A1A in Commercial. The Seascape Motel is not there anymore. And, you know, I thought the book talks about my alcoholic life being normal. And to me, that was normal. For 20 years, that's what I did. It was normal to me. But then I started getting consequences. And you would think that with all the consequences I was suffering, that I would, you know, woke up one day and said, man, I need to quit. But I didn't, you know. During my journey, I had three DUIs in Georgia. That was my third geographical cure. I went to Georgia because I thought Rochester was the problem, not me. And I get to Georgia, and I'm there. And for the first week, I was great. You know, I got a job. I'm doing the deal, I'm calling my mom, everything is good. I'm not drinking, I'm not drugging, but then that thought came into my head. Look, I stopped for 2 weeks. I can't have a problem. Surely I could just do one. Well, that one turned into many, and for the next 2 years, my life in Georgia was a mess. I got 3 DUIs in a 6-month period. 2 by the same cop. And that's a true story. But they let me out of jail on that third one with an ROR. I didn't know what that meant, because I'm thinking I'm going to prison, because 3 DUIs, man, that's got to be serious. Again, my mind's playing tricks on me. I'm thinking I'm done. And they let me out of jail, and I get hooked up with these people at my restaurant, because, you know, my mind, again, is telling me that the only job that I can do is a restaurant job, because in a restaurant, I can make money every day. My people can come see me, you know what I mean? And it's all good. When I get out of jail, me and these three brothers decided it'd be a good idea to leave Georgia and come to Florida. So we come to Florida and we get a, and the whole way down, you know, we got no money, but we're stealing gas and we're going into Georgia stores and we're robbing. Again, a normal life, you know what I'm saying? And we get to Florida. We all get jobs in the restaurant business. I'm working at the first restaurant was right over here off of Cypress Creek, Bennigan's. It's not there anymore. It's TD Bank now. But that's what we did, right? And I still got that warrant in Georgia. Again, I'm 35. I got nothing. I don't have a bank account. I don't have a driver's license. My mom doesn't know where I am. But I'm thinking this is a normal life because I'm not hurting anybody. And I get arrested down here in Florida. And I get a possession of cocaine charges out of Dave and Buster's in Hollywood. Again, any normal person would say, man, all these things that's happening because of drinking and drugging, you might have a problem, Keith. But no, I'm just thinking I can control it, you know. So I go to court, and at the time, Melanie May was there before Judge Beach, and she gave me probation, 18 months probation. Now, mind you, I didn't have an address. I'm living at the Seascape Motel, and we get out of there, and we go our separate ways, because now I'm not starting to like these guys, because I think they're getting high too much, you know what I mean? I think they have a problem. So I go out to Coral Springs and I get a job at Applebee's. Now, as I learned in this program, it's all about God, right? I got to find a God that's going to relieve me of this obsession to drink. But I'm not knowing that. But at the time, I meet this lady named Lorna, and I'm working at Applebee's, and you know, I got that probation charge from Hollywood, but I never go to probation because I'm thinking, okay, out of sight, out of mind, they're going to forget about me because there's a lot of people in the system. They're going to forget about Keith. But every time a cop comes in that restaurant, I'm dipping out the back door, you know what I'm saying? I'm waiting on the table. I got a bathroom break right now because Officer Friendly just walked in. But one day they come in and they get me and they arrest me. And I go, get arrested, and I get out, and my job's still waiting for me, and I go back to work. Now, at this time, I'm in my disease. I mean, I'm bad. I weigh like 140 pounds. All I'm doing is working and drinking and other things. And so one night, this lady, Lorna, you know, she sees me. And again, we never talked at work, nothing. She comes up to me, and she says, come to my house after work. And I'm like, for what? Remember, my mind's a sick thing. I'm thinking this lady has a hots for me or something. No, she's like, come to my house after work. I'm like, okay. So I go to happy hour first. Got to do that. You know, I go to Sharky's Bar up on University. Tie one on pretty good. And so I go to her house. I'm two sheets to the wind. And I walk in, and she's got a 14-year-old son. And again, I don't know it at the time, but this lady literally saved my life. It's like she's the angel that got me connected to who was going to be one of the extra parts of my recovery. So I go there, and she has this good Jamaican food done, and, you know, we're eating, and she just looks at me, and she starts crying. And she's like, God touched my heart. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And she said, I want you to come live with me. Now I'm really thinking she's got the hots for me, right? So I'm like, what? She goes, yeah, come live with me. I want to help you. So I do that, right? And, you know, she doesn't ban me from drinking or drugging. She just says, don't come home drunk in my house because my son's here and he's going to see that. Just don't come home drunk. I'm like, all right, cool. So now I'm coming home, but I'm masking it with the Altoids, the cologne, the Visine. But I'm getting worse, man. I'm getting so bad. And this lady, again, a God-fearing woman, this went on for like a month. And I come home one night and she's waiting up for me. And she says something that, like, just right between the eyes. She said, who are you? I'm like, what? And she said, who are you? I said, I'm Keith Neal. She goes, no. She goes, since I've known you, you've never talked about your family, your mother, nothing. She goes, somebody out there is missing you. And I didn't know what to do, right? I just left it at that and walked away. Well, this went on for a while, and I'm getting to the good stuff, but just want to let you know how I got here. Because I think for me, the main thing about step one is because it goes against everything I was ever taught. Admit I was powerless over alcohol, and then my life became unmanageable. I can never do that because that, again, goes against everything. So this woman, you know, I'm getting worse and worse and worse. So I come home one night, 3 in the morning. She's got the door locked, and she's got these prize roses. And I get out of the car, and I stagger up the walkway, and I hit every rose that she had, like literally broke every one. And I go to open the door, and she's got the latch on, and she looks at me, and she just started shaking her head crying. And I started mumbling something, because it pissed her off. She came outside and slapped me so hard, spit came out of my mouth. And I was like, damn. So she put me in the shower, her and her best friend, with all my clothes on. She told me this later, because I was going to black out. She put me in the shower with all my clothes on. And I guess while I was in the shower, she asked me what my mom's phone number was. And I don't know what it is, but I got like a memory with numbers and with certain things. I got a memory that I just remember things. And I told her my mom's number. And that night, she called my mom at like 5 in the morning. And mom hadn't seen me in 7 years, so she gets a call from this lady in Florida, a Jamaican lady, saying, If you want to see your son alive, you get on the next plane and you'll fly down to Florida. That's the first call mom heard about me in 7 years. Now, mind you, I'm so selfish and self-centered that my mom, I'm thinking I'm only hurting myself, right? Like, I'm only doing this to myself. But I aged that woman 20 years. And so she comes down here, and it was a great reunion, you know. It was a Pollyanna moment. I weigh like 120 pounds, sunken eyes and stuff, and we're hugging, and she's just crying, and I'm telling her what she wants to hear. Like, I'm serious. I'm done this time. This is it. And I meant that. You know what I mean? You guys ever come into a place, like after a relapse or something, and you go back to a halfway house or treatment or whatever, and I think we all mean it when we say, I'm done. I know I did. But somewhere down the line, 30 days later, I forget that pain and suffering I was feeling. And I started picking and choosing my way through this thing. Because when I got here, my cry to Joe was, I'll do anything. But for most of us, for a lot of us, that anything turns into some things and then no things. But with her, you know, I meant it. So we had that weekend together and stuff, and my mom left, and it was all good, and I'm like, this is it. I'm on the ride. And now, mind you, I'm not in AA right now. I'm just with Lorna, who's a God-fearing woman. I'm not in the program. I'm not in AA. Never been to AA, never seen a big book, know nothing about the program. I just know that this woman who's praying for me is I'm going to stay sober. Well, my mom left, and Lorna says, okay, I'm going out of town. I'm going out of town. And you don't have to leave the house, but Keith, do not drink in my house. Don't have a party in my house. Don't get high in my house. Lorna, I promise you, I'm not going to do that. I'm leaving on Thursday, Keith, and coming back Monday. Okay. So she leaves, and you know what happened, right? It was on. Called all my people over, and he just got lit up. Well, Lorna had a trick for me. She came back that Sunday rather than that Monday. And when she saw her house, I can't say what she said from up here, but there was a lot of blood clots and all kinds of no good. So she kicked me out, and she threw out all my stuff, and, you know, the book talks about all your scorecards reading zero. I literally didn't know what that meant at that moment, because I had nowhere to go. No family down here. Every fair-weather friend I had was gone, because I had nothing to contribute to the party. So I called my mom, this woman who I terrorized for years and who I abandoned and didn't know where I was. I called her up and I told her I messed up again, Mom, and I need to get a hotel room to figure things out. So Mom, being the good mother that she was, she rushed me with some money. And I went and got a hotel room right over here off of Northwest 31st in the Turnpike. 5-star accommodation, mind you. And I'm sitting in this hotel room for 5 days. And then Bill's story, he talked about that bitter morass, that self-pity, everything around him like quicksand. I knew what he felt. Because I literally wanted to kill myself at that moment, but Keith was too much of a coward to do that. And so for 5 days, I'm in that room, and I'm just like, God, please, either wake me up and help me, or don't wake me up at all. For 5 days, that was my prayer. And on the fifth day, Lorna showed back up. She found out from my mom where I was, and she had a pack of cigarettes, some Applebee's food, and Solutions business card. And she said, are you done? And I was like, yeah, I'm done. Again, I don't know what I'm in for. I just know I don't want to feel like I feel right now. And I don't know how to fix that. I don't know how to fix it. I don't know how to stop getting high. I don't know how to stop drinking. I just know for 20 years I couldn't do it. I didn't have the power to. The geographic cure stopped working. Everything I thought was going to work stopped working. And this woman, again, it's all God, because she didn't have to do that, but she came and got me. So if you know this neighborhood, and you know that neighborhood, what I'm talking about, we go down Atlantic, and we come down Atlantic, and we make a right down Dixie. Now, mind you, in that whole little spot right there, there's like 100 halfway houses. I like to call them warehouses. No disrespect if you own one of those, but. And the one car she had was this place called Solution Sober House. And we go there, right? And Joe's out in the driveway with Woody Hollywood, who's a German Shepherd. He's no longer with us. And I pile out of Lorna's car, again, looking like death. And we go in the office, and, you know, you got to go through the interview process. And again, I tell him I'll do anything. I know it. I don't want to live like this. I'll do anything. And he gave me a shot. He told me to read the doctor's opinion. And I'm like, what is that? What are you talking about? He said, you have a big book. I'm like, what is that? Because again, I don't know anything about AA, man. I don't know. And like that gentleman said, it's awesome. You only got one white chip. Because relapse is not a requirement. It is not. I've only got one white chip. I don't say that to brag or boast. I say that to let the newcomer know that you don't have to go back out there if you don't want to. If you're done. If you're surrendered. If you're not done, the book tells me go out and try some more controlled drinking. Some more controlled crack smoking, whatever it is you do. Right? That's what the book, I'm not saying that, the book's saying that. So, I read the doctor's opinion. And the doctor's opinion tells me, let's recover the first step again. We admitted we are powerless over alcohol, and if you do anything else, substitute that word for that, and that our lives have become unmanageable. Now, in my mind, I know I get unmanageable. I just explained unmanageable to you. 20 years of unmanageability, I got that. But in the context of what they're talking about here, the powerlessness, in the doctor's opinion, if you guys have never read the big book in the doctor's opinion, if you go just to page one, you miss the doctor's opinion. Because it's in the Roman numerals. It tells me what my problem is. It tells me I have an allergy in the body that when I put alcohol or whatever it is I do into my system, it sets off this phenomenal craving and demand for more. When I read that, that made sense to me. Because man, every time I went out on a Friday night, I'm only going to spend 20. I'm only going to drink a six pack. I'm only going to go out for 2 hours. Again, I meant that when I declared that. You know, that was when I got out of jail. I'm only going to have a couple this time. I meant that. But that didn't happen. I come to you on Sunday morning. I'm like, damn, how'd this happen again? I couldn't explain it. Nobody could explain it to me. But that's not my problem. If I don't put it in my system, I cannot get drunk or high. That makes sense, right? But I have a mind that tells me I don't have this problem. It's called the obsession of the mind. Something like this, if you've been relapsing all this a lot, and hell, if you're not doing it, but if you can't stop drinking, you can't stop starting, and something comes into your head one day that says, you know what? It'll be different this time. Nobody will know. I'm only going to do one and stop tomorrow, pick up a white chip tomorrow. I got to take the edge off after work. Little Susie cheating on me, I got to take the edge off on that. That thing that comes in my head, that, like, that's insane thinking, right? No one, like my three DUIs, my homelessness, after all that devastation I just left, something could tell me that it's going to be okay this time, it'll be different. That's what powerless means in the first step. And so I hear a lot of misinformation out there. Like, if you're new and somebody tells you, you know, answer these 100 questions to see if you're determined if you're an alcoholic or not. Right? I'm not the only one that's heard that before, I'm sure. But the book doesn't tell me that. If you don't know, go to page 44 in the big book. And these are only two questions you got to answer. Two, not 100. It says, if when you honestly want to, you find that you cannot quit entirely, that's number one. Or if when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably an alcoholic. Right? Two questions. I don't have to go to a speaker meeting to hear my story. Because if I go to a speaker meeting, you tell me I got to listen to my story to make sure I'm an alcoholic or not. We can have the same exact story, the same exact history, the same exact past, but I'm going to minimize it just a little bit so I'm not that alcoholic. But when I read this information and mirror it to my past, it lives for me. Because mind you, when I got here, I didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I darn sure didn't know what an alcoholic was. You know, if you heard my story before, you heard me say this before, too. I'm a child of, growing up, I used to watch Andy Griffith. And I would see this alcoholic named Otis every day, every weekend, let himself in and out of jail. You know what I mean? And an alcoholic to me was somebody who was a bum, brown paper bag, Mad Dog 2020, Boone's Farm, whatever it is you're drinking. That's an alcoholic. But that's not what this tells me. See, I got to get honest with myself. The principle behind the first step is honesty. To thine own self be true. And when I read that information, man, it was like a light bulb going off. Because I'm like, man, somebody finally explained it to me. This thing called powerlessness. But how do I fix this? I know the problem now. How do I fix it? Self-will won't do it. You know, I had you guys raise your hand before. So I know, I'm sure there's a lot of you guys have this in your first rodeo. I was blessed and honored to get with some guys that were armed with the facts about themselves in this program. They didn't sit there and tell me, there, just don't drink and go to meetings. Right? Because if I could do that, if I could just not drink and go to meetings, I wouldn't need to go to meetings. Right? I loved how Peter hit it last time. You know, nowhere in this book did you tell me to do 90 and 90. Nowhere. And if we're telling the new people that, we're doing them a disservice. Again, I had people in my corner that didn't care about my feelings. They didn't mind stepping on my toes. They'd rather step on my toes than stand on my grave. And that's missing today. The success rate I hear is like 3%. Why is that? I believe that the message has been watered down. You know, it's been watered down. It's about your feelings. We don't want to be told the truth. These men that I got with cared more about me than my feelings. They didn't care about my feelings. And my feelings got me here. You know, I was told things like, what am I willing to sacrifice when I got here? Because my way of doing it was not working. I couldn't manage my life when I got here. In every respect, you know, I'm going to come to find out that drinking is just a symptom. So they told me things like, Keith, stay out of relationships for the first year. Whoa, whoa, whoa. What are you talking about, Joe? Show me that in the big book. He goes, Keith, they got 80 years of evidence. Hell, you see it living in this sober house. I come in here. Now think about this. I just described to you my state of mind when I got here. I just described to you that I had nothing when I got here. I just described how I got pulled out of the car when I got here. What does that say about the woman who was interested in this when I got here? Right? Because I can't attract nothing that's got 20 years like in there. You know what I mean? I got to stick with the sickies. Meet girl on AA campus. So that was some stuff you told me. What are you willing to sacrifice to you? Now, when I got to this sober, I'd like to tell you that I dove right into the program and I did everything right. That's not my truth. When I got to the sober house, I just wanted to not feel like I felt. And so I got there and I still did everything that I used to do. I was still lazy. I was still not responsible. I was still lying. I was just habitual at every bad behavior you could have. One thing I didn't do was pick up. Now, here's how Joe took a stand for me again. In my mind, I'm thinking the halfway houses are all about the money. If you pay your rent, you can do whatever you want, Keith. That's what I'm thinking. So my mom, this woman who I hadn't seen in 7 years, is paying my rent every Friday. Every Friday she's paying my rent, like clockwork. So now I don't have to get a job because mom's paying the rent. So I'm thinking, Joe's going to be cool with that. Not so. It's like, Keith, y'all want to find a job. He says to me one day, I'm not taking another check from your mother. I looked at him like he was crazy. What? So he didn't do that. No. He goes, you need to get a job. I'm at this halfway house for 6 months. I'm not going to tell you what my rent got to, but it got to a point where that Friday I was getting kicked out of the house. Because Keith thought he was getting over on the system, that he was going to beat the game. Because my old attitude, ideas, and beliefs about life I thought was working. But again, these men took a stand for me, and Joe was not having it. And at the time, John W. owned the Sober House. And he was never there on Friday when rent was collected. This is God working in my life again that I don't even know about it, you know. I'm going to talk about more about God next weekend, but I'm just putting a little sprinkles of him. Because at the time, I don't know it's God, but I'll come to find out later that it is. So on this Friday, I'm about to get kicked out because I owe, like, a lot of money. I don't have a job. I left the house at 8 in the morning, and I've been in my head all day because I don't have a job. I didn't go looking for a job. I'm in my head all day. Squirrely, man, squirrely. So I go to the 101 club for the 5:45 because rent's got to be paid by 7. So from 5:45 to 6:45, I'm praying, clock, please slow down. Please slow down. Please slow down. Please don't get to 5:45. Please don't get to 6:45. And we live right down the street from the 101 club. So when 5:45 to 6:45, when 6:45 hit, we said the Lord's Prayer. I'm saying it very slow, you know what I mean? Drawing it out. Thinking in my head, now what am I going to do now? When I get home, Joe's going to kick me out. I got to have a plan. I got to have a plan. And this is my thought process. My thinking is great when I got here. I had it all figured out. I walk down the street and I walk into the driveway and John W. is there. And this is where my recovery takes off because I go into the office and he's sitting there with Joe. And Joe looks at me, he turns around. He already knows the story. He already knows what's coming. He don't want to hear it. He already knows. So John sits me down and he starts talking to me. And I tell him I don't have the money and you know, I messed up again. And I'm thinking he's about to delay it too. Like, Keith, go get your stuff and get out. But he doesn't do that. He puts his hand on my knee and very sternly it says to me, when the F are you going to get through your head that your word is the only thing you got? And this is your shot. See, a lot of people don't remember that shift they had when they took this thing for real. That was my shift. And I dove into this thing like my life was dependent on it, because it was. And I got a sponsor, and he took me through this book, you know, and talked about the doctor's opinion. That's where I found out what my problem is. And in the first three chapters, it goes more into the step one part, you know. There's a solution more about alcoholism. More about alcoholism talks more to me about my obsession of the mind, this mental block that comes into my head. I already said, talked about that, but we all have that. We all have, think about your relapses. Think about every time you relapse if you're a chronic relapser. Like, the book talks about not a cloud on the horizon. Everything was grand. I drank for effect. I drank when I was happy. I drank when I was sad. I drank when I got a job. I drank when I lost a job. I drank when I had a girlfriend. I drank when she broke up with me. All these things, and I think I can fix that. So I'm sitting here and I'm going through the book of my sponsor and you know, we get the Bill story. I'm like, Bill story? Written by a white guy in 1929? We can just skip over that. That can't relate to me. But man, there is some powerful, powerful, powerful information in Bill's story. On the first chapter, it says, ominous warnings which I failed to heed. Ominous warnings which I failed to heed. I had ominous warnings for 20 years. See if you relate to this. Again, written in 1939, when they didn't even have television and stuff, you know what I mean? Like, whoa. Liquor ceased to be a luxury, it became a necessity. That was my truth, you know. Had to have it. And the bottoms that were hit, like, I'm not trying to compare myself to Bill, you know, because that's, again, I don't know this, so I'm comparing. When they said Bill's story, I'm like, what am I getting out of this? I'm comparing myself to this guy? No, I'm identifying. And all this lived for me, right? The bottoms, but think about this. After a relapse or after your last drunk, like in one of our meetings on Monday night, we do this meditation where we take ourselves back to the last 72, 48 hours before we came into Alcoholics Anonymous. Like that last 72 hours. I never want to forget those last 72 hours. But this is in Bill's story. The remorse, the horror, the hopelessness of the next morning are unforgettable. Can anybody relate to that? The courage to do battle was not there. I was beaten, man. My brain raced uncontrollably, and there was a terrible sense of impending calamity. Like that's so graphic, but that was me. So it goes on, you know, he has his meeting with his buddy, Eddie, and again, we're going to get to the God thing, because I'm going to find out that the book tells me that there's no human solution that's going to remove that obsession to drink and do whatever it is you do, right? We all got our evidence to that. When I got here, think about that statement. No human solution. So Judge Beach couldn't do it. Solutions couldn't do it. 90 and 90 wasn't going to do it. My sponsor wasn't going to do it. The treatment center is not going to do it. And I come in here anti-God. And I'm going to hit that next week real hard. But if anything like me, I didn't want to hear the God thing. Did not want to hear that. Because, again, I'm a product of the 80s. And when you talk to me about God, this is how messed up I am. In the 80s, you had these people, this couple, this glam couple called Jim Baker and Tammy Faye Baker. And these people, you know, did horrible things in the name of God. 700 Club, and you got Jimmy Swaggart saying, if I don't get $100 million in 30 days, I'm going to hell or heaven or whatever. I'm going to die. So I condemn the whole religious community because of these three people. And you're telling me I got to find a God of my understanding to get this thing. Whoa, whoa, Joe, it's got to be another way. You sure that 90-90 doesn't work? But Abby tells Bill something that takes that whole argument away, you know. He says to him, choose your own conception of God. Now, if you don't cover Bill's story, you're going to miss that. If you don't have a sponsor that's in this book, you're going to miss that. Because how can I argue the fact, choose my own conception of God? There's no argument. So, that's what I did, but we'll talk about that next week. But going back to Bill, he had that meeting with Eddie. He was expecting, because Eddie was worse than he was, you know what I mean? Eddie was a worse drunk than Bill. And when he showed up, Bill expected to get drunk the rest of the day and reminisce about the past, but he didn't. He saw Eddie fresh-faced and glowing. Like, that was the power of God. He didn't have to hear it. He had to go to speaker meeting. He saw Eddie. That was his truth. Like, there was a miracle sitting right across from him. Why wouldn't you want that? So I asked you newcomers and you people who have been struggling, why wouldn't you want this? It's here for all of us. So Bill does his work, his steps and stuff, and he gets sober. But this is important right here because I talked about my buddy Danny who died. He had 19 years sobriety, and he died. And I'm sure we all, like you guys raised your hand, so you guys know people who have died. Some people have gotten 10 years. Some people have gotten 20 years. Some people have had 5 years and relapsed. Why is that? Well, here it is right here. In Bill's story, the story I wanted to skip. So my friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. What principles are they talking about? Behind each step in this process is a principle. Particularly, it was imperative to work with others as he had to work with me. Faith without works is dead, he said. Now here's a kicker for you people who relapse and who've had time to relapse. And how appallingly true for an alcoholic. For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If he did not work, he would simply drink again. And if he drank, he would surely die. Then faith would be dead too. So we hear people go out all the time, you know, all the time. And a friend of ours, he says it like this, you know, they come back in and, you know, people will say, well, how was it out there? I want to smack somebody when I hear that. Because you know how it is out there. It doesn't get any better. The question you should be asking this person, how many people are they sponsoring? Who are they helping? What was their service commitment, right? There's too many people dying on our watch, and I don't want to get sit up here and be sanctimonious, but meeting makers make it, they don't make it. then make meetings. Just don't drink and go to meetings. You're not going to recover. Think about this. And I'll close with this. The holidays are coming up on us, right? The month of November is supposed to be gratitude month. If you've been struggling, if you're in your third treatment center, if you're in your 16th halfway house, and every Christmas your parents don't know where you are, and every Christmas you're the elephant in the room, and you haven't been home for the holidays in years, what better gift can we get our family and our loved ones this year? Right? We can recommit at any time. At any time, if you've been not doing a deal, if you haven't been all in right now, you can change that right now. You can recommit right now. So, to Rachel and James, thank you for having me. And God bless.